The following Dharma talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So tonight I would like to be in touch with Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva who is guiding us this month in our art practice. Avalokiteshvara, to invoke the mind of loving kindness, compassion in all corners. And compassion is not just a feeling. It's a response to pain, deeply rooted in wisdom. One of our candidates encouraged us to be patient. To me, that was a voice of Avalokiteshvara coming through. Just be patient. So what are the energetic qualities of ourself as Kanan? Where do we find this in our renewal of vows? So we enter here into this space, and those of you at home are coming in through your space into our space very consciously and deliberately into the Zendo, into mind, individual and collective. Entering into Buddha mind, we identify with Shakyamuni. Entering the mind of deeply rooted in wisdom, the mother of all Buddhas, Prajnaparamita. Entering into the mind of compassion, loving kindness, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. All beings are one essence. In meeting the hundreds of thousands of shapes and forms. So we might think of Fusatsu as the skillful means of Avalokiteshvara. Compassion in action. We could feel it as 10,000 hands and arms wrapped around us here. Looking down, hearing the cries of the world. The same thing that moved through the Buddha 2,500 years ago. The skillful means offering us Fusatsu, renewal of vows ceremony. Bringing the Sangha together to allow us, as we chanted in the beginning, to acknowledge any karma, harmful, negative, binding karma created, and to take responsibility and atone for those actions so we can both individually and as a community proceed forward unburdened. To visualize this entire space and yours at home wrapped in her wide arms with wisdom, a Buddha field. And then we renew our vows, our Bodhisattva vows. And this is the medicine we could surely use. We have a way. We're given a way. That helps. It helps me, and hopefully it helps you too. And what are those vows? These are the vows of great compassion. And it doesn't just happen, although we are naturally compassionate, we do know we have to cultivate that within us. It doesn't always come so readily. Loving kindness that is based in a sense of having no self-centeredness, no self-serving motive, that our whole activity is to help other beings, to help another, to serve, to be one energetic body of Kanon. So we began with an homage here at the altar. Homage is to show publicly special honor and respect. We offer flowers. We offer candlelight. We offer incense. We offer full prostrations, expressing our reverence, our humility, our respect, lowering ourselves to the ground, exposing our top of our head, a very vulnerable place where we're not seeing anything for a moment. And you may have noticed that the text on the 37 practices of the Bodhisattva by Gyal Thogme, who is said to be a manifestation, he himself says he's a manifestation of Avalokiteshvara in the body of a 14th century Tibetan teacher, begins with Namo, Namo Lokiteshvara. Namo, meaning I pay homage. Loka, the world or universe. And Ishvara, the powerful master, the all-powerful master. I pay homage to Avalokiteshvara, compassionate self appearing in the form of a deity, aware of suffering of all living beings, continually turning the Dharma wheel in the 10 directions, manifesting whatever form is an appropriate response to help living beings. And we need this liturgy, which Daido always spoke of liturgy as preparing the mind. So we could say all day is liturgy. All day we're preparing the mind. All day is a liturgical ceremony of preparing, of being prepared to open, to be opened, and opening further still. So these are necessary actions, necessary gestures to open us, to begin to take in what we're about to take in, atonement. That's a pretty big task. So we make ourselves opened to being open to receive and to give. Because usually we just barge in and take what we want. So we're not barging in. We know the poisons of greed, anger, and ignorance are strong. We can be greedy for the mind of enlightenment, greedy for wisdom, greedy for compassion. And we're used to bypassing our shortcomings. So we allow the vulnerable ability of to manifest so we can take on and feel what it, the weight of our, of healing our karma. So we can feel the weight of healing our karma. And then we come to our knees and place our hands palm to palm, not two. Acknowledging the many belief structures that we carry that cause us to divide what's undivided, to go into duality, that cause us to go into hiding. So we are modeling to ourselves that we can speak and listen from a sense of total and absolute unprotectedness and unity, not gosho. Meaning every place in ourselves right here now that is afraid of telling the truth, to see it, to hear it, really perceive the calling and answering, so we can tell the truth to ourselves. And the best way to go to these places is with our sincerity, so that we won't shy away from any parts of ourself that are still in conflict. Hong Shi wrote, contact phenomena with total sincerity. Be willing to sincerely want to see and feel everything. And in the true spirit of self-study, over time, we will see everything we need to see. Daito Roshi said many times, know that what our bodies are doing, what our voices are expressing, what our minds are experiencing, is precisely the karma we are creating. So compassion is sometimes defined as the heart that trembles in response to pain. That's compassion. The heart that trembles in response to pain, or the capacity to feel with. We may have heard that one before. The capacity to suffer with or to feel with. Born of our capacity to be willing to meet the pain rather than run from it, to feel with. The Dalai Lama once said, if you want to know compassion, look deeply into the eyes of a mother as she cradles her sick, fevered child. And I could really feel my mother when I read that, because I remember that experience. I remember the look in her eyes when I was a feverish child. And the concern, the patience, the forbearance, the complete acceptance as her eyes looked at me. And we each know the power of compassion and the wish to bring pain to an end. If you think about it, we each know that, right? To heal and be present for another. And I do think we aspire to want to embody this, because it is who we are. Because we know it. We have all encountered moments when our walls of defense and resistance crumble, and this warmth emerges as our hearts are comforted or altered by the tenderness and forgiveness we receive from others. We all know this. So sometimes compassion emerges in the darkest moments where all the exits are closed and our heart turns to stone. At every turn, we face situations of pain and turmoil that feel unbearable at times, yet must be borne. So the edges of our tolerance are constantly being tested. In the 37 practices of a bodhisattva, we learn compassion is not a quality to be cultivated in isolation. How many of them are in relationship? So it's cultivated in the world with people, those we love and care for, and the countless people we recoil from. This is where we recognize what it is to take the path of vow, right there, to return endlessly to our vow. That's such as the life of a bodhisattva. And it's not a life, as we know, reserved for someone else, not the Buddha, for our parents, for the ancestors, for someone's, some other place, some other time. But it's you. It's me. Yes, compassion being the natural conditions of our hearts, we will feel a rub. Is the rub letting in? Is the rub letting out, keeping out? Are they different? What's the rub? So we do need to have a clear, true north. How we're going to direct our life. So it doesn't matter what our spiritual, political, social, or any background is. We all long for tenderness, understanding, and safety. That's what nourishes our spirit. Compassion restores us when all our certainties, defenses, and supports are stripped away. That is what heals us. Allowing ourselves to be affected. Experience the weight of what needs healing. And I was remembering the Buddha once said, "You can search the entire world over and not find anyone more deserving of your love and compassion than yourself." And I remember at the time being a bit puzzled because I was receiving an abundance of teachings that stressed selflessness, letting go of self-cherishing, the emptiness of self. So what is the Buddha's words speaking to? How would we ever be able to extend boundless compassion unless we know deeply what it means to to hold that for ourselves with this body and mind in a compassionate heart. So we have to do this right here at home. In turn, turned by others. In the Lotus Sutra, Avalokiteshvara is spoken of as being the one who bestows fearlessness on those who are fearful or in difficult or oppressive situations. How can she offer such fearlessness? It's when we have each met that fearlessness, that fear to meet the fearlessness, gone into that dark cave of fear, and having come out, not turning away, entering those places where our mind is topsy-turvy, crazy, and not turning away. So when fear is met and falls away, compassion manifests spontaneously. Suppressing fear or being untruthful, we are actually trembling, is exactly what prevents us from that natural expression. We go into protection. So one translation of the name Avalokiteshvara is Ava is down. Lok means to look. Avalok means looking down. And ita makes it a noun. So it becomes the one who looks down. And Ashvara is sound. The one who looks down upon the sound. The one who looks down upon and hears the sounds, the cries of the world. So what she embodies is the energy of noticing, observing, of being present to the cries of suffering in the world. All the sounds are the resonance of her speech. So what are we hearing now? So we have an invitation at every instance, at every event of suffering, to let in the message that says, are you listening? Understand me. Listen deeply. Hear me. At every instance of suffering, can we hear? Listen. Understand me. Respond. The moments we're afraid, agitated, or cruel, these are moments of suffering. And to see that the so-called angers, fears, and judgments are not in themselves obstacles to compassion, to feeling with. Rather, they become so when they're left unexamined, unquestioned. Can we listen to ourselves in such moments as all evil karma ever created by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance? Now I atone for it all. Avalokiteshvara hears the cries and delivers the words. All evil karma created by me. She's listening. She's delivering us words to grapple with the roots, the root causes and effects of harmful karma, and to look down and see, where are we standing? And to look around and see what our life is right now, right now. And to look behind and see what has come forward, see what we've created, take responsibility. And then the voice comes again. Please understand me. Hear me in this. One teacher wrote, finally you say, please. Please make me simple. Please make me free. The moment that you call saying please is Avalokiteshvara. There is no subject who is calling, and there is no object you are calling upon. Because the one who is calling upon something is simultaneously what one is looking for. That is Avalokiteshvara. In the comments on the Heart Sutra, Thich Nhat Hanh writes, she looks down upon the world and sees all the suffering, and she says, yes, there is this suffering, but there's no intrinsic being to it. And if we can see that just for a moment, we begin to see that we can loosen our desperate hold on who we think we are, what we think our situation is, and who we think the other is. And we allow ourselves to be more interrelated, more active in a true sense, truly active. We learn to accept feelings with equanimity, allowing them to arise and pass without identifying with them or acting upon them. Then Namu, being one with. How do we be one with? Allow every thought, every breath, every cell in our body to rest in that intimacy, that unified state with anything. So in Zazen, we began with Namu breath, Namu mu, Namu awareness, Namu the past seven Buddhas, Namu Shakyamuni, his realization is my realization. Namu Manjushri, the wisdom that cuts through delusion, is my wisdom. Samantabhadra, Avalokiteshvara, that fearless heart of compassion is this heart. So Namu is to be them. They may be examples, role models, archetypes, and then to be them. So one woman in our Sangha who just gave birth at home, she spoke of this new language, which has been longed for in the birthing world, I'm told. And it's being created by doulas. And when I heard it, I was like, you can hear the kanon emerging in the voice of the doulas. So here's some of the new language that I heard. Birthing replaces labor. Surge or waves replaces contraction. Birth breathing replaces pushing. What a shift in language to such a more softer, more compassionate way to hold the unknown. Deep trust in the cycles of nature, the feminine, the quality of being emphasized, where in the world doing is what has been considered superior. Being. So Namu, in touch with Avalokiteshvara, Namu as a feminine presence, caring, compassion, respectful, empathetic, trusting, patient, nurturing, being able to hold uncertainty with the timing of birth. Namu, a masculine presence, bringing the needed structure to the new story that emerges from deep listening of the feminine, being shown with outstretched arms, eyes wide open, a serene face. Namu, seated on our lotus seat, open, allowing a flowering of our heart and mind. Namu, holding a book, pouring out boundless love and compassion. Namu, holding a willow branch, being able to bend in the fierce storms and winds of our lives without being broken. Namu, painted with 10,000 arms and hands, each with an eye of constant awareness of the anguish and the all-embracing responsiveness. Namu, an uncompromising face of compassion, protector and guardian, committed to uprooting the causes of suffering, manifesting as an armed warrior with all kinds of weapons, crossbows, spears, and shield. Shantideva taught, whatever you're doing, ask yourself, what is the state of my mind? With constant mindfulness and alertness, accomplish good. This is the practice of the Bodhisattva. Do no harm, practice virtue, discipline the mind. Deeply listening as Avalokiteshvara, guided in our decisions and stories by the question of our indigenous grandmothers, the ones they always asked, does this support life? All life. The discipline to apply, to act, and check. Vimalasara offered this short gatha called Detox Your Heart. Watch your thoughts, they become stories. Watch your stories, they become excuses. Watch your excuses, they become relapses. Watch your relapses, they become diseases. Watch your diseases, they become vicious cycles. Watch your vicious cycles, they become your wheel of life. So we will chant at the end of Fusatsu, being one with the three treasures. Raise the Bodhi mind with all beings, not alone. Realize the Dharma, penetrate all sutras, see into our true nature with others. Being one with Sangha, leading the people through seeing, hearing, responding with 10,000 eyes of heart with all sentient beings. As only we ourselves can do it, we are not alone.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.